All right, I just pulled out the IFB, just finished another interview. This time we are going to talk a little bit about that field that's behind me. Many fields across the United States and Canada. What's on top of them? What's being produced, but not in the ground, above the ground? We're not going to talk about wind. We're going to talk about solar. And before you hit skip, give this a listen. Dr. Richard Liu is the CEO of Solar Bank. It's based in Toronto, Canada. We had a conversation about solar in general. Talked a lot about what's going on in Canada, what he sees as the United States, what's happening here, the goals of administrations, and what they have been about renewable energy and also the Inflation Reduction Act. Where are we on clean energy? We know that ethanol is one thing. We know that wind has become a thing. Hydrogen. But solar is the one that really seems to be pushing a lot of buttons in our audience here of Market to Market. By the way, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Dr. Liu is asked several times, and then he says it again for those in the back, about what type of land companies like his are looking for. Where is solar expanding to? Is it the prime ground of the Corn Belt and the Grain Belt? Is it land around? Is it the highway? Is it the brownfields or the town dump or the county dump? We're going to get into all of those questions and more in this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. Dr. Liu, the Canadian people get this reputation of it always being cold and snowy. But in the United States, we've done a much better job of keeping the snow longer than you have in Canada. Are you a Canadian native, and are you still trying to get used to those winters?
I've been in Canada for 32 years, and this is the most northern country I've ever been. But I tell you, you know, Toronto is better than Buffalo.
Oh, man, you can say that again. Holy cow. That lake effect. Who would have thought being on the wrong side or the other side of the lake would make such a difference? Not
absolutely
wrong.
I think, you know, being in Toronto for so long, and I feel that is almost like you're living the ocean side. And we have a lot of projects in upper state New York. And I leave Toronto with a four-season tire. I will end up a snow tire when I'm driving on Interstate 90.
I love it. So 32 years, what brought you to Toronto in the first place?
So by training, I'm an occupational physician, and I came to Toronto working for University of Toronto, but quickly that decided to go back to industry, so start consulting, worked for Husky Injection Molding Systems, for Enbridge, for Toronto Hydro, all the way till 2007 that I started my own company, Abundant Solar, and 15 years later, now the company is a public listed, and it's called Solar Bank.
So why solar?
You know, I think, you know, if you look at the world energy, that most of them are fossil fuel based for the last 100 years, right? You do have nuclear, which is non-emitting, and you have hydro, which, you know, is clean, but nonetheless, you have a larger environmental footprint. I look at the wind, and wind have moving parts. I think being a utility, people would like to have a passive generation, and the solar panel is the only technology with passive converting light into electron. Without the moving parts. You know, of course, if you do tracking, there's moving parts. But I think for me, a safe and reliable and a low-cost way producing energy is a solar panel sitting in the field, you know, converting light into power. So that's what we're doing.
All right, we're going to get back to that word field, because I have a huge audience that always thinks that every solar panel is taking over every farm field in America or North America. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so Solar Bank, publicly traded company in Canada or in the U.S. as well?
So we currently listed in the Canadian Security Exchange. We're in the process to moving to the main board, and we are over the counter in NASDAQ and in Frankfurt. I think, you know, we are now in the process of moving into the main board. But I think eventually we'll be listed either New York Stock Exchange and do listing in Canada, Toronto Stock Exchange.
What does that mean? What does that infusion of cash mean for you and what you're able to do as a company?
You know, we have been in business for 15 years, and we're always making money by doing good. And, you know, we always have been a very cash positive operation. What limiting our growth is really working capital. As you know, that you know, interconnection costs a lot of money and costs a lot of time. You know, at this moment, you know, we have millions of dollars with utilities are waiting for interconnection studies, right? So this public listing gave us access to the public market, which really improved our working capital. You know, let's say our working capital, probably a few millions. Now it's tens of millions. You know, let's say we'll only be able to do 10, 15 megawatts a year. Now we can do more, you know, 20, 30, 40 megawatts. It really speed up the deployment of our pipelines. And of course, you know, by doing so, we deliver more green energy to the world and slow down the climate change and global warming. So, you know, not to mention that creating investment opportunities for the society.
The Canadian government, what is their interest in what you do?
You know, I've been in Canada for 32 years. Most of the time I in the States and in Canada. I would say we are actually, you know, from an energy perspective, you know, Canada already 82% are non-carbon emission power. In the States is 80%, you know, fossil fuel based. So in Canada, they're more emphasizing on additional renewables. You know, but I think, you know, the market is relatively smaller than in the U.S. You know, U.S., I would say, even though you have more, only 10 times more people there, but your renewable market is 100 times bigger than Canada, right? So, you know, you have an Inflation Reduction Act, which is putting hundreds of billions of dollars into it, 50% ITC and all of those. In Canada, we're only 30% ITC. But, you know, we have something to be, I would say, be relaxed about. You know, we're already green, mostly. You know?
Well, in that 32 years that you mentioned in Canada, was the industry driven without the government or with the government's help?
No, I think, you know, as you know, climate change, global warming is truly, truly a policy driven. You know, I think, you know, it's an infrastructure issue. You know, it's not something average citizens like myself can do individually. Right? It takes a movement, I would say. You know, it starts from recognizing the rising sea levels, you know, more tornadoes in your areas, and the wind could be picking up a farm, a cow maybe sometimes, right?
That's just in the movies. That's just in Twister. Come on.
Yeah, it does happen, right? So that's why every country realizes, and you probably know United Nations have this net zero goal. Many, many companies are signatory to that requirement. And now, you know, I think, you know, environment, social and governance, those ESG components in every major corporation's mind, right? So it's I would say it is a combination, but mostly I would say this is a policy driven versus a societal driven.
So then in the United States, you mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act. That was a policy attempt to try to help the green industry. Yeah. Do you see the United States expanding green energy through policy?
I think in the United States, I would say, you know, the next, I would say before 2030, you know, certainly before 2050, you will see a huge shift of the energy landscape. You know, I think a couple of ways, you know, currently, as I mentioned, 80% of the U.S. power is fossil fuel based. With the Inflation Reduction Act, with investment in not only the utility in terms of large renewable energy, such as wind and solar farms, but also you think about community solar that each individual can participate, let alone of the commercial and the institutional companies such as like Honeywell or even houses in your neighborhood, right? So they are all equally have access to that industrial funding, right? So that will give people not only a desire to be more green and, you know, more participation in fighting climate change, but financially make that more viable, and not to say that they create jobs, converting from traditional fossil fuel-based jobs into more environmentally you know, friendly jobs. So that's where I would say certainly happen. I think you have a slogan in the States called the 30 by 30. 30% of energy is renewable by 2030. I think with Inflation Reduction Act now, you are actually 80% by 2030.
yeah, that was part, I think, of the Biden administration's goal, was to push that forward quicker.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you see in the United States the greatest resistance coming in oil producing regions or outside of those? To solar, specifically.
I think, you know, lots of people are trying to pick a fight. You know, let's say, you know, it's two parties play a game, right? But in my view, I would say, you know, it's a collaborative and a concerted activities. You know, when we talk about net zero, it doesn't mean there's no fossil fuels. In my view is that, you know, net zero means that whatever fossil fuel I have to use in terms of CO2 equivalent, and we have equivalent of power, that renewable power, that we're not emitting that level of CO2. So the CO2 level that we as human civilization release to the natural environment will be zero, right? Because of this, I would say, you know, our industry is built over the last 200 years based on steam engines, which is, you know, fossil fuels and so on and so forth. That technology and equipment and asset will gradually retire, right? And in the meantime, you replace by renewables, you know, in the years to come. So 2030 is very probable, 2050 is very certain, right? So oil companies, you know, most of them are investing heavily into renewables. You probably in Canada, you know, we have Alberta producing 10% of your energy to the States through Enbridge, which is my old employer, through the Enbridge pipelines, right? They buy solar farms, they invest in wind, they actually do carbon capture. Right. So I would say I would rather see them as a enabling and a collaborative party than that, you know, we would get in the fight. Yeah.
Well, do you see Enbridge doing, I guess maybe don't say Enbridge specifically, but do you see those types of companies doing that as a hedge to just, we're in oil? Yeah, we need to be in renewables. Is that more public relations for that hedge, or do they truly see it as a business opportunity?
I think it could be viewed as a public relation tactic. You know, as you know, recently the Royal Bank are taking first place to finance the fossil projects that made the headline. I'm sure, you know, people are thinking it's the U.S. banks, but now it's a Canadian bank funding those, right? If you look at their investment in renewables, probably less than their traditional, energy investment, right? So, you know, with people looking at this one, they could say, well, is this just a greenwash, right? But, you know, if let cross section, it may be. But if you look at the long term, you know, it takes a process, right? So for Enbridge, for example, they're already trying to inject hydrogen into their gas pipe. Why do they do that? Because they are required to reduce the carbon content. Well, there's only a methane. You really cannot change in the molecules, but you could put in more hydrogen, right? So they realize have a sustainable business over the long run, right? You have to gradually off-ramp certain things and up-ramp certain things. So to me, you know, could be at times viewed as a green tactic, but I think, you know, it takes a different speed to get where we want to be.
Okay, let's go back to the field situation here. Do you see in 20 years fields like this covered with more solar, or do you see residential properties being where the biggest growth will happen? I guess I'll go United States specific. Where do you see solar?
I love those fields behind you, I tell you. And I don't think those things will be covered by solar panels, right? You see, when we develop solar projects, we go after the land that is not agricultural suitable. You know, the soil, for example, in Canada, they divide into 12 levels. 1, 2, 3 are fertile agricultural soil. We even don't touch it. People even pay us, and we say, no, we're not going there, right? So we go to those places, you know, people grow hay, and they sell hay, I don't know, $500 a bushel or something, right? You know, the farmers rarely can make up, you know, a living on it. Right. And it is truly not, you know, impacting on the food, so on and so forth. So if you look at the overall Earth, if you think about Arizona, North Dakota, South Dakota, those places, right, there are many, many non-agricultural areas, right? So that's where I see a lot of utility solar will grow, right? So that's one market that actually will give you, help you to achieve the goal of renewable procurement portfolio standard. That's a requirement for every utilities over time has to achieve, right? So that's one section. The middle section about the community solar and the CNI, right? So that's to enable the community to participate. You know, to me, you know, if I'm looking back there, you know, there may be some areas in your area, really, you know, it's difficult to find, you know, a non-productive land, but there might be some. Could be 10 acres, could be 40 acres. You just don't have those hundreds of acres, right? And you might have some brownfield, you might have some closed landfill. You know, those are what we focus on, right? And we recently built two solar systems for Honeywell on over their a maintenance yard on the roof, right? That is enough to power that building, right? So those are the ones in the middle. People already installing on their roofs at the residential level, you know, but not everyone has a roof, right?
Right, but those that do could maybe put it on.
Yes, and the payback, I tell you, is pretty reasonable now with your pace and with your ITC. You know, lots of people in the past, I think when I started 15 years ago, people say, oh, solar is so expensive, you know, why I do that, you know? But now people never ask this question now. It's basically how fast can you install it, right?
Right. Okay, well, let's say my power company has its own coal-generated or wind-generated or their own solar-generated plant.
Yes.
They create their own power. Why would they want me to put solar on my roof? Because then I'm not buying from them. Do you anticipate that there's going to have to be some, I guess, policy or government action that helps these two parties find common ground?
Yeah, I think, you know, back to 100, 150 years ago, the system was built, the central system. That's where we have generation, transmission, distribution, all the way to our homes, right? So that system has been operating, let's say, 100 plus years. And that system, you know, is at the end of its life, infrastructure. You'll probably hear, you know, people complaining they never put back enough money to keep the things up and running, right? Reliabilities, you know, power outages, and so on and so forth. So the company, in this power company, they need investment. Where is the investment money coming from? From ratepayers, from you and I. We pay the electricity bill, right? So that's one thing. So they say, oh, our system is not good enough to meet the demand. You will have to build new ones. Well, you don't have to be the only one meeting the demand, right? You know, you can extend your infrastructure life. And of course, still something need to change, right? Such as replacing the PCB-based transformers. But you can also allocate some demand to meet the demand at the customer end, which is rooftop solar, carports, little community solar, and so on and so forth, right? So there will be a balance. You know, we talk about the microgrid. We talk about AI-managed, you know, a virtual power plant, and so on and so forth. Those new technologies, you know, coming from Toronto Hydro, I will say we like it because they also know that they need to be modernize their infrastructure. Right. So I would not say that, and eventually it will be a benefit between the central backbone, which is base load, and the, you know, customer end systems to meet the up and downs.
Well, I guess I may have missed something in what you said, because if I'm not paying my energy company for my electricity, they're not going to have that money to reinvest in that technology.
Two things. Even though you are not paying for the electron, you are still paying, or you have paid for the wires to get your house.
Okay. Right?
Because when in the night, when there's no light, you still need the power. That power is from the grid, right? So that's why a lot of utilities have a net metering project. You know, when you're producing more power, the power goes this way. When you don't produce power goes this way, so that at the end of the day, your meter is a net, right? So that's where I would say, you're actually not, you know, reducing the revenue from the power company completely, right? On the other hand, you know, the company now will have to have more time to actually focus on the infrastructure, right, versus the commodity, which is electron itself.
Okay. A little bit about my area. When we don't have farm fields here, Mm-hmm. Along our interstates in the central part of the United States, we are full of warehouses, large buildings, large parking lots for those warehouses for semis. Are those prime spots for solar panels?
That should have already be power generated area yesterday, you know. You think about it, right? You know, we're currently building a 4 megawatts solar rooftop in a warehouse in Alberta, right? They produce fossil fuels. But the people there realize, you know, they have to also achieve net zero. So we are building those one on the rooftops, right? And a couple of things. Now you're producing enough power to power the warehouse. You are sending the green power to the grid. You're also protecting the roof because the roof is no longer be bombarded by UV lights. So the life actually get extended, right? And also you're actually helping energy efficiency because you don't have the heat or cool the building much because now you have a jacket above the roof, right? So there are many, many, I would say, benefits only if you're willing to look at it. And we have a lot of converted real estate asset companies that are approaching us.
So I had asked that question, I want to say back in January, with an energy person in the South, Southern United States. And they said that a lot of the big box retailers specifically and some of those warehouse folks, they get a really, really, really good deal on their electricity and they're not interested in the solar. How do you change the mentality for those two sides?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons that why the I would say the implementation of this is not fast enough. Electricity is a commodity. They have long contracts. You're stuck with a contract. Let's say I sell you at, 6.5 cents, right? But you have to buy from me for 10 years. Well, you're only in the fifth year. You know, there's a, like your mortgage, if you terminate, you sure pay a penalty, right?
Yes.
So you let it run out, right? So that's one. And secondly, that, you know, if the building is fully leased out, depends on the lease agreement between the owner and the tenant, the owner may not have the right to do it because the tenant's responsibility, the tenant is only going to be there for another 3 years, where the solar installation is 35 years life, right? So it is only a transition, let the old contract finish, let the old agreement finish, then you can start with new and going forward. So we're going to see a lot of a transition. That's why the industry said this is an energy transition in the next 10 years, right? It will happen.
It will. So what has been the best, the greatest technology in solar itself? When you talked about how the panels were expensive, you'd had people tell you that. Where was this breakthrough that's happened that it appears to me in solar in the last 5 years?
I would say that when I started the solar 2003, you know, I paid $4 a watt, you know, for a panel. Now, you know, I would say 20 years later that we only pay 30 cents a watt. You know, you can see the cost reduction, right? And the cost reduction is not only because of the volume, the scale of economy, but also because of the technology advancement. You know, when I started, I think the panel was 9% efficient, 11% efficient. Today, it's 27% efficient, right? You know, so that's where I would say the cost reduction in the renewable energy, including wind, you know, are very, very fast over the last number of years. So we can actually produce renewable energy cheaper than traditional form of energy, you know, produced from coal, by burning coal or natural gas.
I've mentioned this land a little bit before, and you mentioned marginal land and in Canada, the grading of systems. So say this isn't prime for you, but there's 2 acres, 10 acres. Is that efficient to find the dump in my home county or along the interstate or the four-lane road? How do you tie all that together to make it efficient to get to the grid or to somewhere that can use that power?
Yeah. See, that's where the technology coming. You know, we're talking about smart grid. They talk about a local community solar. Because you think about, you know, when the power produced from a central plant, if they have to travel hundreds of miles, right, they lose power. You know, it could be lose by 10-15% by the time get to your places. Where if you have this one, you know, in the dump behind the county's office and the people are in this village, right, those line loss and everything is be much, much less, right? So actually, we love those smaller projects, you know, 10 acres, 40 acres, you know, even a big warehouse of 5 acres, right? So those are the distributed generation, I would say, probably more easier to adopt and more economical, you know, for people to use renewable energies in most places.
But if I have 40, if I'm you, I'm going, why can't I get 80? Why can't I get 140? Why can't I triple what it is there? Because more is better, right?
Yes, but you got to think about, you know, the big utility solar farms, right? You know, it's big, you know, 300 megawatts each. So they're talking about thousands of acres, right? But they take a long time to build. Even after they build, they can only sell the electron at the wholesale price. Like, I don't know, I think Tennessee Valley broke the record some years ago, like 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour, right? Most people sell 4.5 kilowatt hour because this thing has to be transmitted far, 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 right? But if I'm building back behind your meter, you know, you're taking a huge discount on your retail price. Right. So let's say you're paying 12 cents. I give you a 10% discount. You're still paying me 10 because I'm small nearby, not much losses. Economic is better. Right. But if I build a big one, yes, I make lots of money, but I'm only selling at 5 cents a kilo. Right. So from Wall Street perspective, they're looking at internal rate of return in terms of project return. You know, usually talking about the utility energy, so on and so forth. They're talking about, you know, 8%, so on and so forth. Right. So size actually, you know, has its pros and cons. We happen to believe distributed energy more than centralized energy.
Well, I have folks that come on our show. Talk about, oh, this home farm here, they want to build, they want to carve it up into solar, and they don't think it's that marginal of land. It's a lot of anger. Anger is the word I'm using about solar panels taking up valuable farmland at a time when they think we need to be producing more to be on a stronger global footing and feeding the world. At what point does the regionalization or that 10 to 40 acres, how long can it hold up? I mean, you're talking about efficiencies, but how long can it hold up before we need to see, for powering the world, bigger fields? Or more of them? Maybe not bigger, but more.
Yeah. You know, I think Elon Musk mentioned that, you know, for solar to power the United States, they don't need to put solar panels all over the places. They just need to cover the deserts, the gerbes, and the non-productive areas. Mm-hmm. So solar actually is not the major reason that, you know, to reduce the farmland, right? What people need to really focus on is look at those brownfield, those landfill, those marginal land, and so on and so forth, okay. You know. Don't have really to push in agricultural. You know, for example, for God's sake, you know, one day that we cover all the highways using solar panels and the trucks still can drive on it, we don't need any land, you know.
Well, and I've said along the interstates, there's a whole lot of shoulder in a lot of places. And there's already infrastructure run with electric already along the interstate. So some of that's already there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You know, just, you know, we are one of the 6 companies that qualified of Maryland Department of Transportation, right, to work on to how to green their transportation system along their highways. So there are states, you know, the DOTs are thinking of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you mentioned Elon Musk and the various parts around the country. With ethanol, I've heard this debate that maybe ethanol doesn't need to be a national mandate, but all this renewable energy needs to be whatever is best in your region. So if solar, if we put panels all through Utah and Nevada and into Eastern California, that will power the West. They don't need to have our wind. But if we're really windy in the in Central, we'll have wind, but we have solar. Do you see renewable energy succeeding the most on a region-by-region approach?
I think renewable energy actually is the best to be consumed at what is produced. You know, I think in the United States, power is actually a state responsibility. In Canada, power is a provincial responsibility. The federal level is only overall principles, fundings, and so on and so forth. So I would say the local solution is the best for the local issues, right? And, you know, in your agricultural area, you mentioned the ethanol, right? You know, those are biofuel, right? The ethanol can be cracked into hydrogen, right? And hydrogen driving fuel cells. The fuel cells are in your cars, right? So nowadays, people are using EV charging. For small cars, it's great. You know, people putting hydrogens on trucks, that's probably is all right. But hey, you know, I once upon a time was in a biodiesel business. We put, you know, biodiesel, which is from agricultural product, into the truck. They run just as well. You know, it's carbon neutral. It's not carbon zero, but it's carbon neutral, right?
Yeah.
Right? So our farming community, you know, actually do have ways to participate in the overall fight for this climate change.
Well, how much have you noticed in Europe the stories about solar panels and agriculture living side by side, even agriculture under, or as the panel moves during the day, that it becomes a crop that's maybe different than what they grew there? Is that a good suggestion, a long-term,
you know,
is that just nice pie in the sky?
You know, I tell you, there's actually a specific term for it. It's called agrivoltaics. You know?
Say that again. It's called what?
Agrivoltaics.
Okay.
Agricultural photovoltaics. So it's an agrivoltaics, right? And we practice that. For example, some of the solar farms, we do the ground cover with grass that is good for sheep, right? We sometimes cover it with flowers, sometimes for beekeepers. Right. And sometimes that because the clearance is about 3 foot up from the ground, there are plants that can grow underneath it, you know, such as blackberries, right? Blueberries, right? I was in Greece looking at a agrivoltaic greenhouse that they have. They actually do very neat things. They study the frequency of the light, saying the plant likes this frequency. Let the frequency go through the panel. The panel, like that frequency, let the frequency stop by the crystal to turn on electricity. So I will say agrivoltaic is another good thing that can be, you know, I would say coexist with farming communities, right? But I would say, you know, look at the beautiful land behind you. I'd rather that as a huge combines going there harvesting, you know. I probably wouldn't touch that.
Well, and there's a lot of farmers in my home area that freak out. And I've used a couple of strong words when they hear about solar panels because they think it's coming for their land.
No. You know, we actually cycle the things very, very carefully. You know, we look at the land. If we find them are agricultural act, you know, productive, we usually don't touch it. Even on the marginal ones, we go through a process with the zoning board, with the town board, with the planning board. And, you know, there's lots of public meetings and so on. Mm-hmm. People are not against the renewables, right? They just want to make sure it is a sustainable development. Sustainable means that let the land be good for agriculture to produce food, let it be. And the worst, they're not producing enough economics for the livelihood of our farmers and so on and so forth. We find alternatives, you know.
Okay, let's close with this. In 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. solar power is what? The largest renewable fuel source we have? Or energy source, I'm sorry, not fuel, energy?
I would say let's say by 2030, right? 80% of the power in the States will be from renewables, and those renewables will be from wind and the solar. I would say a lot of offshore, a lot of in the mountainous, hilly areas will be a wind that to provide this backbone and so on and so forth. And the solar probably be more in the areas that are close to populated areas on the roofs and the parking lots, the brownfield and so on and so forth, marginal land, right? Those two technologies, you know, probably, and hydro, of course, will make up, you know, that 80% by 2030 in the United States.
We're going to have a lot, just maybe not a clear winner, but just everybody's percentage goes up as they take away from other sources. I hear you.
Absolutely.
Okay. I appreciate it, Time. Thank you so much for helping me understand, and I think some of our audience have a little better understanding about solar.
No, thank you so much for this opportunity. I look forward to your area to enjoy a ride among those beautiful greens. Thank you.
My thanks to Dr. Richard Liu, the CEO of Solar Bank. If you have any ideas for me on this podcast or somebody you want to pitch that I should talk to, send me an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. New episodes of this podcast come out each and every Tuesday in audio form, wherever you get your podcasts, and also in video form on YouTube. We appreciate all of you who watch, and we'll see you next time.